Dr. Jack Evans, some of you know that name. He was the president of Southwestern Christian College in Terrell, Texas, proud alumni. I think Tracy Rice is in the house. it's in Terrell, Texas. It's a historically black college and university. It's the only historically black college and university affiliated with the Churches of Christ. It was June 1987. I know it vividly because in the first week of June of every year at the Linwood Church of Christ, we had our annual gospel meeting and homecoming. It was that first week in June every year. I believe that church is still in existence. It's gone through some changes and splits and other things, but still the first week of June, that's the gospel meeting. And homecoming. And in 1987, I remember the front door of our house. You know, we had a regular door, and then we had a storm door and a glass. And on the glass, my mother took some scotch tape, and she pasted or taped on the front window of our door a flyer that says, "You are cordially invited to the gospel meeting and homecoming at the Linwood Church of Christ at 481 Linwood, Buffalo, New York, 14225, featuring renowned gospel preacher, Dr. Jack Evans, president of Southwestern Christian College in Terrell, Texas." I remember that as though it was yesterday. I remember the picture. I'm pretty sure this was the picture that was on the flyer. Searched through the internet and found it. And this week, that 1987, was the first time I had ever attended a gospel meeting and homecoming celebration where for that whole week, Dr. Jack Evans would preach on Sunday morning, he would preach Sunday afternoon, and then he would preach nightly at 7 o'clock at 481 Linwood. And our goal that week was to get the word out. We printed thousands of flyers, and we passed those flyers out to church members, and our goal was to go out into the neighborhoods and invite everybody we could to come to this gospel meeting and homecoming so that they could hear the gospel preached by this renowned gospel preacher, Dr. Jack Evans. How many people here, that was your tradition growing up? You had gospel meetings, you had these tent meetings, or you had these revivals, and the goal was to get the message out about God, about Jesus. That was something that we identified with. If you grew up in Churches of Christ, this was us. This is what we did. This was the language that we spoke, and we couldn't wait for the gospel meeting week. We couldn't wait for the homecoming celebration. We would have the gospel meeting all during the week, but Sunday afternoon we would invite local Churches of Christ to come in and join with us, and they would bring their singing groups, and we would have a song fest and an a cappella fest, and all these groups and soloists would get up and sing, and we'd have food and eating like you would never believe. My mother early on became one of the church cooks, and she was cooking all the food and all the chicken and all the potato salad and all the, and we had a good time, but it was all centered on this idea of reaching people for Jesus. Evangelism, reaching out to the lost. And every year, we look forward to that. And that seemed to almost be like our new year, because it would seem like from that point, it gave us this evangelistic fervor that led and fueled the remaining months and the beginning months of the following year. We averaged probably 60 to 70 baptisms a year. We love telling people about church and telling people about God and telling people about Jesus. Not only did we have gospel meetings and homecomings, we sang songs that reminded us and let other people know that this is what we were about. And so we sang songs like "Send the Light," and well, later on we would sing, you know, "Ring the Message Out," and we would sing songs like "Be a Light for Jesus Every Day," and we would sing songs like "This Little Light of Mine," and we would sing songs like "You Gotta Take the Lord with You Everywhere You Go," because we wanted to leave the doors after we left worship. We wanted to walk out of the doors into the world with this understanding that we had to tell other people about Jesus. Now, all these songs in melodic harmony re-emphasize our call to reach men and women. But it wasn't just the songs and it wasn't just the gospel meetings. We had a robust Bible study program where you could fill out a card and say, we want an in-home Bible study. And we would come to your house. And I know I've told this story before. We would take one of those old film strip machines, you know, with the boop, you know, remember those machines? Like, we would go in people's homes, and cannot believe we used to do this. We'd go in people's homes and they watch the film strip, and you know, the guy would be talking, and Jesus said this. Boop, and then that's when you're supposed to advance the slide. So all you young people who don't know about that, good times, good times, good times. Later on, they got really like technically advanced. They put it on the VCR tape. And so we could put it in the VCR tape and they could watch it with no boops. And it was man, we love telling people about God, Jesus, church. We were fervent about it. We had a strong connection to evangelism. That's evangelism just means spreading the good news. And we it was just who we are. So here's a question I want to ask. And I'm not asking this question to make us feel bad about ourselves or to indict us on anything. But the question is, do we still have that fervor? Do we still have a love and a desire and a strong connection to this idea that once we leave these doors, it is our responsibility to send the light, be a light, let this light shine, tell others about Jesus? Do we still have that? Maybe we do. Whether we do or we don't, from time to time, we need to be reminded that this is our call to go out and to share Jesus with people. It's that question, is this idea of reminding that I want us to lean into over the next several weeks in this series entitled Each One, Reach One. The idea is that everyone here who is a follower of Jesus would just reach one other person for Jesus. I'm not asking everyone in here to go out and evangelize an entire neighborhood and convert 40, 50 people. Just want you to think about, over the next year, just reaching one person for Jesus. Just one. Let's read some scripture. Let's start in the Gospel of Luke, chapter 15. And prayerfully, over the next 4 weeks, what we hope to do is to somehow reshape or reignite our hearts to look like God's heart when it comes to the lost and reaching people for Jesus. Luke chapter 15, I'm going to read the first three verses. It says, now all the tax collectors and sinners were coming near to listen to him, talking of Jesus. And the Pharisees and the scribes were grumbling and saying, this fellow welcomes sinners and also eats with them. So then Jesus told them a parable. We'll come back to that in just a second. Church, if you know me intimately, if you know who you are around when you're with Dion, you know that there's something about me that I can't shake. And that is, I lose everything. I got in the car this morning to come to church, and my wife is driving, and I get in the passenger seat, and as soon as I sit down, the first thing my wife says is, do you have your wallet? Do you have your keys? Do you have your phone? Because she knows. She knows every week I lose one of those items. I have a coffee cup that says wallet, keys, phone. It's a reminder. I am certain that my neighbors play a game. When I leave in the morning, because I'll leave and then I'll drive and come back in the driveway, go back in the house and get back in the car, and then I'll leave and then I'll come back. I guarantee my neighbors are like, oh, what do you think it was, his wallet or his keys? Like, it's just who I am. I lose everything. We moved here in 2002. We lived in some townhomes down here off of 256. And I lost my wedding ring. And you know, I don't want to make light of this. That was a really painful season for me when I lost my wedding ring. You know, it was something my wife gave to me. It was precious. It represented so much, and I lost it, and I tore the house up. This is why my wife doesn't like me losing things, and even when I do lose things, and she said, what are you doing? I'm looking for something. She almost gives me this look of terror, as if to say, let me look for it, please, because you will tear the house up. And church, I tore the house up looking for my wedding ring. I could not find my wedding ring. Months later, I'm guessing 3 or 4 months later, I'm without my wedding ring. It's, again, really, really painful to know that I lost my wedding ring. I'm in our townhouse. I'm coming downstairs. I had one of those Christmas popcorn tins. You know what I'm talking about, those big popcorn tins? Don't ask me why. After 3 months, I still had a popcorn tin. Don't ask me why I was coming downstairs with it. But as I was walking down the stairs, I heard metal to metal. And I thought, what is that? And I opened the popcorn tin, and my wedding ring was sitting on top of the popcorn. Oh, you don't understand. I immediately put the ring on my finger, didn't even wipe the butter off. And I put the ring on. I went outside. I knocked on all the neighbors' doors and said, I found my wedding ring. I went in the house. I called my mother. I called my brother. I think I told you. I told everybody that I found my ring. There is a reason to celebrate. All of that happened except for the neighbors. There was a reason to celebrate. I found my wedding ring. Isn't it something when you lose something and you finally find something, that feeling you get when you find it, especially when it's something that's so precious? Have you ever been lost or had a feeling of being abandoned? I was in second grade, Buffalo, New York. It's winter time. I used to get picked up from school from my mother. Oh, actually, it was my father. And this day, when I left for school, my mother said, hey, I'm coming to pick you up today, so watch out for me. Oh, okay. She says, don't leave. Just, I'll be there to get you. And so I stood out in front of the school. It started to snow. And it started to snow, like, kind of bad. And I'm sitting out there, and, you know, everyone is leaving. They say, oh, see you later, Dion. Are your parents coming to pick you? Yeah, my mother said she'll be here. She said, just wait right there. And an hour passed, and I am standing in a heap of snow. And a school employee came by and said, are you okay? I said, yeah, my mom said she's going to come pick me up. She said, stand here and don't leave. And okay. And he left, and I was out there another hour. I was out there probably about 2.5 hours, and finally my mother showed up. And she came out the car, and she felt horrible. She says, Dion, I totally forgot I was the one picking you up today. And this is what she said. Why didn't you walk home? I said, I've played this game before. You told me to stay here. I'm not doing what you said not to do. You told me to stay there, and that's what I did. But she got to explaining, like, what happened. And you know what? As I recall back as a I was seven, I didn't care. I just knew that my mom was here, and that just made it feel all better. I remember being cold while waiting, but when she got me, I don't remember that I was cold. I don't remember that I was standing in 8 feet of snow. I just remember she came and got me. Found me. Anyone ever have that feeling of feeling abandoned or disconnected, but then feel connected and feel found? And that is a good feeling. That's a great feeling. The feeling I had when I found my wedding ring, the feeling I had when my mother came to pick me up from school after 2.5 hours, I loved that feeling. And you know what? I want everybody I come into contact with to feel that feeling, particularly when it comes to being lost and found in the story of God. And that's where we launch this idea of each one, reach one, and developing a heart for the lost. It starts with an understanding of where we were and where we came from. We were lost, and now we're found. And that feeling of being found, that good news, we want to share that with others. And that is what those who didn't understand Jesus constantly missed. They would see Jesus eating with sinners and tax collectors and people who had bad reputations, and they were bad people who did bad things all the time. And we're not going to spend time here trying to choose what kind of sinners they were. They were sinners. They sinned all types of sins. We don't want to get into the habit of saying, well, Jesus ate with these sinners, but he didn't eat with those sinners. No, Jesus ate with sinners. Bad people, bad reputation. You use your imagination of who these sinners were. Jesus ate with them. And those who opposed him would often question him and his disciples because they constantly saw Jesus with these disciples. And he says, Jesus, you eat with these people. And that's a problem. In this culture, that's a problem because you don't eat with people who aren't your equals. If you're a Jew, you eat with Jews. If you're a Greek, you eat with Greeks. If you're rich, you eat with rich people. If you're poor, you eat with poor people. If you're a righteous, temple-going Jewish believer, you eat with a righteous, temple-going Jewish believer. If you're a sinner, you eat with other sinners. So by saying, Jesus, why are you eating with sinners? It was almost as if they were calling him a sinner. They didn't understand. You're teaching all this righteous stuff over here, but you eat with sinners. You don't do that in this culture. But not only do they say you eat, they say you also welcome sinners. That's a huge leap from eating. Because by welcoming, you're saying that you are welcoming them into your space and into your life. Why would you allow them to be so close to you? Why would you allow them to be in your space? So they're asking Jesus this poignant question. And Jesus takes an opportunity to respond to these accusatory questions. And he does so in a way that he often does. He tells stories. And so listen to the stories that Jesus told after being asked, hey, why do you eat with and welcome sinners? This is chapter 15, verse number 3 again. So he told them a parable, which one of you having 100 sheep and losing one of them does not leave the 99 in the wilderness and go after the one that is lost until he finds it. When he has found it, he lays it on his shoulders and rejoices. And when he comes home, he calls together his friends and neighbors, saying to them, rejoice with me, for I have found my sheep that was lost. Just so I tell you, there will be more joy in heaven over one sinner who repents than over 99 righteous persons who need no repentance. Or, what woman having 10 silver coins, if she loses one of them, does not light a lamp, sweep the house, and search carefully until she finds it? When she has found it, she calls together her friends and neighbors, saying, rejoice with me, for I have found the coin that I had lost. Just so, I tell you, there is joy in the presence of the angels of God over one sinner who repents. Now, those listening and those who are hearing the stories of sheep would know that this is an important matter. Sheep was very important to the economy back then, and your sheep meant your livelihood. And also, people knew that shepherds and sheep were so close and so connected. And I imagine that as they listened to that, they were like, "Yeah, I get that, man. A shepherd loses a sheep and finds it. That's a cool thing." You know, some of you animal lovers, you know, you lose your pet, you go look for your pet, and you know, you get the flashlight, you put on the rain gear, and you're out, and you're, "Hey, Spot, where are you?" You know, all the things that you, and then when you find, you know, the dog hears your voice, and then the dog runs to you, and you make a video about it, and underneath, you know, you've got like some sad Sarah McLachlan song playing, and then you reunite, and then you put it on YouTube, and you get a million views, and everyone cries, and like, "Look at that reunion." We get that. I'm sure those who heard that say, "Yeah, okay, I get that." I mean, the going and celebrating with the neighbors, that's a little excessive, but okay, I get that. You know, you're lost. You're happy. Then they hear the next story about, you know, money. You know, who doesn't like money? And you got 10 coins. I don't know how much these coins were worth, but you know, you're down one, and so you turn over the house like I do when I'm looking for my keys, wallet, or phone, and you sweep and you do all those things, and you find all the things that you weren't looking for when you're looking for the thing that you're looking for, and then next week when you're looking for the things that you found when you were looking for the thing you weren't looking for, you can't find those things. I it happens, but man, she finds the coin, and man, she's happy. She celebrates. I mean, maybe that coin was the difference between paying a medical bill, or maybe that coin was the difference between paying her tuition or rent. And so, yeah, there's room, you know, inviting everyone over for a celebration, a little excessive, but I get it. You celebrate. There's some joy when you find things that were lost. But I wonder, as Jesus told these stories, if with each successive story, they begin to gather that, man, we're getting set up for something. I'm not going to go into the third story today. We're going to talk about that one in a couple of weeks. But Jesus is certainly doing something. He's talking about joy. He's talking about celebration. See, I get it. I get the joy of finding something that's so precious to you, and when you find it, the joy and the relief that you have. By the way, the reason I think my ring came off in the popcorn is because my ring was size too big and it fell off while I was eating popcorn. I have since resized it, and I very rarely take my ring off. But let's consider this, that when Jesus was asked about why he eats with sinners, in rapid fire, he was able to give stories while being lost and being found, and the connection, the joy, celebration. There is joy when something is found or discovered, like the joy you feel when your loved one has been traveling and gone for so long, and then they come back into the house. Doesn't your heart, like, sometimes it just starts racing because your loved one is back? I have two beagles at home, Linus and Lucy. We have an app on our phone called Life 360. Y'all know about Life 360? When you arrive home, there's this chirp that happens. And if I just play the chirp, our dogs go berserk. The first thing they do is they run to the front door. And when no one comes in the front door, their mind says, "Oh, they must be coming through the garage." And then they run to the garage door. Even though we're sitting right there in the room, they do it every day. Last night I did it, and I filmed it. I'll show you the video next week. I just played the sound, and they just went, "Row, row, row." They started jumping, ran to the front door, then ran to the garage door. There's joy that these dogs have when their owners get. That's Jesus says to the question, "Why are you eating and welcoming sinners. Let me tell you a story about joy celebration. And again, we're going to get to the third story that really brings that point home. You might have already guessed that we will be talking about the joy that God has when the lost are found. It's the same joy that we had when we were passing out flyers of Jack Evans, trying to tell folks, hey, come listen to this good news. And then when people gave their lives to Jesus and were baptized, we celebrated. It was joyful. This has always been the heart of God. This has always been the thing that gets God's heart racing. We all know that the world was created and things went awry because of sin, and people, men and women, began to rebel against God. God has always been in the business of finding those who were lost and those who rebelled and bringing them back for reunion. This is what the prophet Ezekiel said in Ezekiel chapter 34. He says, "For thus says the Lord God, I myself will search for my sheep and will seek them out. As shepherds seek out their flocks when they are among their scattered sheep, so I will seek out my sheep. I will rescue them from all the places to which they have been scattered on a day of clouds and thick darkness. I will bring them out from the peoples and gather them from the countries and will bring them into their own land. And I will feed them on the mountain of Israel by the watercourses and in all inhabited parts of the land. I will feed them with good pasture, and the mountain heights of Israel shall be their pasture. There they shall lie down in good grazing land, and they shall feed on rich pasture of the mountains of Israel. I myself will be the shepherd of my sheep, and I will make them lie down, says the Lord." Listen to this. "I will seek the lost, and I will bring back the strayed, and I will bind up the injured, and I will strengthen the weak. Fat and the strong I will destroy. I will feed them with justice." God has always been on the lookout for the lost, and he looks and pursues with an ever-loving eagerness to be reunited. The love and eagerness is stronger than the bond with a sheep. It's stronger than an attachment to money or coin. God's heart is for the lost. Not only is God's heart drawn to the lost, reunion with the lost is the source of jubilant celebration, a celebration that invites others to be partakers of the celebrations, partakers of the joy and the bliss of reunion. Onlookers are invited. Neighbors are invited. Family, they're invited to celebrate the lost being found and being brought into communion, community again with God. This was the spirit we embodied at Linwood during gospel meeting weekend and even throughout the year. This was the spirit that was embodied last week in this room when this young lady was baptized. I even heard someone say, "Angels are in heaven celebrating, and we celebrate with the angels." This is the spirit of joy and celebration that is stronger than Vanderbilt beating number one Alabama. This is a joy that is strong. It is expansive, and everyone is invited to be joyful. Why am I eating with sinners? Because in the end, it's going to lead to celebration. And so, we are being prompted this morning to receive and embody the heartbeat of God when it comes to the lost. If we are to become a community where each one reaches one, we all have to start with that heartbeat of God and being joyful when the lost is found. We were lost, but now we are found. Do you know that when we were found, there was a party in heaven? There was a celebration in heaven bigger than any football victory. The heartbeat of God races when he finds the lost. And so, may our hearts find rhythm with the heartbeat of God that gets faster. We reach the lost when the lost are indeed found by God. This will be our journey over the next several weeks. The heartbeat of God races when God finds law, may our hearts be in rhythm. As we sing this song of invitation, I pray that we would begin the journey towards reigniting the fire that once caused us to sing songs. I know in my youth group, we used to sing a song called, "It Only Takes a Spark." It only takes a spark to get a fire growing. That was our concluding call at the end of every youth group. Take what you did in here and go share that with someone outside. Just one person. It only takes a spark to get a fire going so that we can have joy and celebration when God finds the lost. As we sing this next song, if we could be helpful to you in your walk with God, maybe today is the day you want to give your life to God, Jesus. I heard that there is someone planning to do that. If you want to reconnect, if you've been out there, one of the other celebrations we love to have is those who had previously a relationship with God and they walked away and they find their way back. We're going to talk about homecoming in a few weeks. It's a reason for celebration and joy. May we have the heartbeat of God. If there's any way that we can serve you today, please come as we stand. Let's sing this song.